We are very fortunate today to be joined by Mostafa Terab, Chairman and CEO of OCP. OCP is not necessarily a household name, so in a nutshell, a century-old company with 18,000 employees, about $11 billion in revenues and $5 billion in EBITDA, hails from Morocco, but active globally. The business's fertilizers, and particularly phosphate-based fertilizers, OCP is a major actor in this activity, including because it controls 70% of the world's phosphate reserves. And last but not least, OCP's activities represent about 5% of Morocco's GDP and about 20% of the country's exports. Mostafa, is this a fair high-level summary?
Yes, this sounds... the main figures are there, but what I like is the century-old company. This is... long-term is important for us.
Okay. So you're going to tell us more, obviously, over the next few minutes. Then at a personal level, Mostafa became OCP's chairman and CEO in 2008, which means 15 years ago. Before that, you had three very different lives. So born and raised in Morocco. The first life involved a lot of education, graduating in engineering from one of France's oldest and most prestigious schools, the École Nationale des Ponts et Chaussées. Then receiving a master's degree and a PhD in operations research from MIT in Boston, and then providing education for 2 years as a professor at the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. So that was life one. Life two, returned to Morocco in 1992 to serve in the King's Royal Cabinet as chargé de mission, and then over the next 10 years, increasingly senior roles to support the development of Morocco, including the reform of the telecoms industry. This leads to the third life. In 2002, you returned to the US to join the World Bank, where for 4 years, you led the InfoDev, Information for Development program, focusing on the liberalization of the telecoms industry. And now, your fourth life, joining OCP Group, first in 2006 as Director General, and in 2008, being appointed chairman and CEO, which marks the start of a very ambitious 20-year transformation program, which obviously we're going to discuss together. Between 2019 and 2021, you were also president of the International Fertilizer Association. Mostafa, a warm welcome to you, and thank you for making the time to be with us today.
Thank you. It's good to be with you, also.
I've already mentioned that OCP is a major actor in the world of fertilizer, but I think for our audience, it would really help if you tell us a little bit more about the basics of fertilizers. What do they do, and why are they so important for all of us?
Well, thank you again, Jean-François, for the opportunity to explain what we're doing and the significance of fertilizer, which I have to confess I was myself surprised to hear those to learn those things when I got to OCP. I didn't know really fully grasp the role of fertilizer in food security. But a couple of facts that are not usually well known generally is the fertilizer accounts for about 50% of food production. That's a positive way to view it. The other way is that without fertilizer, we could only feed half the world population. So they play a critical role in plant and soil health, not only the quality, but also the productivity of the arable land that we use to feed ourselves.
There are different types of fertilizers. I mentioned you guys do phosphate-based. Please tell us about phosphate versus nitrogen versus potassium, because I think it's useful for us to know that.
Yes, absolutely. Well, think of fertilizers as vitamins for the soil and the plant, and we usually need multivitamins. The three main nutrients that go into fertilizer are those that you mentioned, so nitrogen, phosphate, and potash. But keep in mind also that there are other so-called micronutrients that are also essential for soil health and plant health, and that ranges from zinc, boron, and many other micronutrients that we do also add to our fertilizer mix. So they're usually called NPKs, nitrogen, phosphate, and K for potash, but they usually other initials, zinc and the Z and the NB, etc. So it is really the best way to think of it is multivitamin formulas, if you like.
Now, the world's use of fertilizers is very uneven. It's much more intensive in developed economies. And as I was preparing for this discussion, it struck me that this creates a little bit of a vicious circle because farmers in developing economies don't necessarily have enough money to buy a lot of fertilizers. And so they're going to get weaker crops and weaker productivity, which means they have less money. So is it indeed a bit of a vicious circle?
Absolutely. So if you think that the so-called green revolutions, mainly in developing and emerging countries, governments had to put in place policies to get out of that vicious circle, because by definition, the small landholder does not have the means to buy fertilizer, even though fertilizers will increase significantly productivity and thereby improve the livelihood of those farmers. So usually, if you think of India, Brazil, and other countries that have embarked on the green revolution, fertilizer policies and making fertilizers affordable for the farmer initially, either through subsidies and other schemes, was key to break that vicious circle.
Okay. Now, this is a particularly acute problem in Africa, which, of course, is a problem for Africa's farmers and inhabitants, but also for the world. Again, I remember from a previous conversation we had, I said improving the productivity of agriculture in Africa, of course, is very important for Africa. And you said, yes, it is. But you also said, Jean-François, you need to understand that productivity of agriculture in Africa is important for the world. I think this is something that many of us just never thought about. Can you please help us understand why?
Yes, absolutely. It's counterintuitive, but we should change our mindset very quickly. Let me just give you again a few figures. Arable land per capita globally, worldwide, is decreasing because of population growth, but mainly also because of the available unused arable land is disappearing worldwide, except in Africa, where 60% of the world's unused arable land lies in the African continent. So it's massive. And if you think of it that way, then you realize that we have to find ways to make Africa actually contribute positively to global food security. In the meantime, we have to also contribute to solve Africans' food security itself. But, you know, sooner or later, we will have to realize that our mindset about Africa has to shift. Africa will be part of the solution for global food security.
Now, last basic question on the world of fertilizers. Fertilizers are helping agricultural productivity, clear. They also create significant environmental hazards, both while being produced and then when used. Please tell us a bit more about both sets of challenges.
Of course. So, you know, we as a company, we think of them as many other companies in terms of, for example, net zero in terms of scope 1 and 2, which is how do we make sure our own production system contributes positively and not negatively to the environment. And that's, you know, mining activities and fertilizer production activities are naturally resource intensive, use fossil fuels and emit CO2s and other gases. For us at OCP, we see it as an opportunity because using, for example, renewable energies, producing our own water from these renewable energies through desalination and other technologies is not only a way to green our production and really be net zero. You know, we've committed as a company to be net zero before 2030, but it's also an opportunity because these energies are much cheaper for us than, for example, the energy we buy from the grid that are fossil fuel based. So there are major opportunities because of technologies, renewable possibilities to really handle the production side of things. On the so-called scope three, on the agriculture side of things, there are also opportunities. The environmental damage that can come from fertilizer comes from overuse of fertilizer. So when you cannot adapt the fertilizer, the mix of nutrients, if you recall where we started with the NPK mix, if you are using just the standard formula, multivitamin formula, if you like, you're bound to apply nutrients that are not fully absorbed by the soil and the plant. And then this is where the leaching in the water table and in the atmosphere becomes a problem, an environmental problem. Again, the opportunity there for us is that we are committed to customize fertilizer. So, and technologies allow us to do now in terms of doing soil fertility maps, in other words, making specific formulas, fertilizer formulas, for specific soils and crops, and only encouraging the farmer to use just the right amount of nutrients. That has two or three very positive impacts. One is that they are cheaper fertilizers, and thinking of the vicious circle you mentioned, Jean-François, early on, in Africa, the fertilizers we sell are much cheaper than the standard fertilizer because they contain less nutrients. Okay, they also avoid environmental damage because we ensure that the nutrients are fully absorbed by the soil and the plant who needs them and don't go in the water table. And they have higher productivity, counterintuitively, because when you're applying the right fertilizer at the right time, the fertilizer industry, IFA, that you mentioned, the International Fertilizer Association, is promoting the 4R techniques, which is the right fertilizer for the right soil at the right rate, etc. That is also much better for plant and soil health and increases productivity. So there are massive opportunities for the fertilizer sector to become very quickly a positive contributor to the environment throughout the supply chain.
Now, over the last few years, OCP has been able to develop this leading position and to translate this leading position into very successful financial results. Revenues and profits have grown very significantly during your tenure, and there are multiple causes. Now, some of these causes are, I think, systemic tailwinds, right? This has been, I think, by and large, a growing industry, in part because the world needs to feed more and more people. So please tell us about the underlying market dynamic.
Well, again, the underlying, you know, we view the market as really the food security. It's the global food production chain, and the fact that our footprint is now beyond just the raw material, the phosphate that's used to produce fertilizer, is only natural, because going downstream to the fertilizer, fertilizer is just a service to the farmer, and the farmer, particularly in Africa, but also in other regions, need other services. When you're providing access to fertilizer, it's a pity not to use the same channels to provide other inputs or advice, or even financing, microfinancing in Africa, crop insurance, and things like this that improve. So we view this as a holistic, with a holistic approach to things. You know, it's our interest that the farmer in Africa clearly comes out of poverty but gets richer. They deserve it, you know, in terms of their own access to markets downstream. Once they've produced the crops are produced, etc., the farmers need to have access to downstream markets, if only to have some degree of say in the prices of their products. We consider it as fair that a farmer has some say to in terms of pricing their own products. And that can only happen if we think of it as with a systemic mindset and a holistic mindset. But the broader market there, if we think in terms of market, is trillions of dollars. If you know, this is the food, this is the agriculture and food supply chain. It's probably close to $5 trillion today, and will only increase because of population growth. You know, in 2050. We will need to produce 70% more food than we produce today. So that gives you the rate of growth that we're looking at.
Clearly, one of the reasons also why OCP has been so successful over the last few years, including an EBITDA margin that tends to be significantly higher than many of your competitors, is indeed the company's transformation and the move downstream. So you've already mentioned it. You've mentioned it as if it was, you know, almost a simple thing. But going from exporting rock to making products and increasingly to making very sophisticated products and then adding services must have been a complex journey. So please tell us some of the key milestones and some of the key decisions that were involved in this transformation.
The first, I would say, key decision was almost forced on us. I would almost joke by saying that given the situation the company was in 2006, it was a loss-making company with negative. Actually, it wasn't a company. It was a parastatal that had a balance sheet, but it had negative equity in the balance sheet because it had, you know, its core business was phosphate rock. You know, the prices of that raw material had remained stable in nominal terms for 3 decades. So we were losing money every year and had a very negative equity in our balance sheet. So there was a burning platform. If you're thinking in terms of change management and transition, we were lucky that there was a burning platform. We had to get out of that situation. So the first challenge was where to go. And clearly that was a no-brainer. There were higher margins in the finished product, in fertilizer. We decided to allocate some of the phosphate rock to fertilizer production. And indeed, this is, we think of this as our first S-curve, was to become a player in the downstream market, in the fertilizer market. And indeed, this is what has paid off. But in terms of change management, in terms of managing a difficult transition, again, I consider we were lucky to have a burning platform because that allowed us to not just to convince, but actually to bring enthusiasm within the company in terms of that change process.
And so one aspect was to make it a company, separate entity. And for that, you also brought in a small minority shareholder, a bank. And then there were also massive investments, right? Because this required the different set of equipment and also capabilities.
Yeah. So it was kind of a classic story. So we were a parastatal. In 2006, I described the situation. We decided, we first said, what should our strategy be? So going downstream again was a no-brainer, but we obviously needed to invest, and we ended up investing massively, about $8 billion in fertilizer production capabilities. But it required first to change our legal status to that of a corporation, then look at doing an inaugural bond issue on the international market, which we did a few years later, very successful, $3 billion. But also initially, we needed an investor that would believe in that story and the strategy we were embarking on, and that was a local bank, was a mutual bank, that said, I buy the story, I'm going to put the initial equity, which was about $1.5 billion, to help you get a balance sheet that at least you can present to the bondholders. And that's exactly the financing story. Then we started building those fertilizer factories, and things got better. We retained earnings, also played a key in our financing, and until we got approximately an 8 million ton fertilizer production capability. At that time, we could breathe a little bit.
Now, a key component of this transformation has been the focus on R&D and innovation, which is obviously not a given in an organization that was previously largely a basic mining company. So how did you go about developing this innovation capability?
Well, first, it's a human story. It is creating an innovation mindset. And this is where we were also lucky. You know, the main asset in innovation and R&D is human. It's not the technology, etc. There is a global market for technologies, but you need to create an appetite for innovation, etc. And this is where I was very lucky. My first visit to the mine at OCP, I will never forget, because one of the blue collar worker there, a miner. Imagine, this is the first visit, and I had all the vice presidents and CXOs with me, trying to explain to me how these 70% of world reserves of phosphate were a huge opportunity, and this is really the we were custodian of this wonderful wealth, etc. Which, by the way, in my mind, didn't really sink. I mean, I had just looked at the. As a newcomer at the financials, and there was this contradiction between the wealth, so-called wealth, and the financials. But nevertheless, that miner told me, I am sure that they are telling you wonderful stories about that wealth that we have, which is the mining reserves. And I said, you're right. They're very proud, my colleagues seem to be very proud of this. And he said, well, you have a choice, a basic choice. Either you believe them and we're going to go to bankruptcy, or you understand that our real wealth is human capital, then we will succeed together. And I never forgot that. And this was really that particular moment is still with me and guides everything we do at OCP. So when we think of innovation, and R&D, it is indeed intellectual, but in a way, it starts with human capital. It starts with choosing collaborators that have that mindset, that are hungry for innovation, that want to take risks and create the right framework for them. So it started with the learning journey before even the R&D journey, if you like.
And you say it starts with creating an environment where they want to contribute and innovate. Now, one aspect of the environment that you've tried to create, I think, is a very purpose-based and a very stakeholder approach to the activities of the company. Am I right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, how do you create that appetite? So beyond that. Those phosphate reserves, that's not going to excite many people unless there is a greater purpose. You are capable to co-produce some kind of greater purpose. In our case, it's clear what it is. It is bringing life to soils, because phosphate has this special role in terms of soil health. It's really key to soil health as a nutrient for the soil. It helps build the organic matter in the soil, And more importantly, it's really the vitamin for the roots of the plant, which themselves play a key role in soil health. And so, you know, our greater purpose is to make sure that the soils are healthy, that we bring life to the soil, so to speak, so that the soils can feed us in return. So, that's the first thing, is you need to that a greater purpose that can excite people and excite collaborators. So that's the first thing. The other part, and that's part of the environment. We view it as almost this magnetic field that everybody is embedded in, and that guides their thinking and their action. And once you trust that magnetic field is there, that greater purpose is the guiding light or the North Star, if you like, for everybody, then you can free up, you can do away with most of the, I would call them the bureaucratic or command and control type of systems, because you know they're guided. You know they look at the same North Star.